بداية كريشنا بستاند بليس تيب موغانيش سيس بس تشانس ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
हिरण्यकशिपु terrorizes the universe. Sa Sa uttama shloka padaravindayo Nishivayam kinchana sangalabdaya Tanvan param nirvitim atmano muhur Dusangadinasya mana samam vyadhat Translation. Because of his association with perfect unalloyed devotees who had nothing to do with anything material, Prahlad Maharaj constantly engaged in the service of the Lord's lotus feet. By seeing his bodily features when he was in perfect ecstasy, persons very poor in spiritual understanding became purified. In other words, Prahlad Maharaj bestowed upon them transcendental bliss. Purport. Apparently, Prahlad Maharaj was placed in circumstances in which he was always tortured by his father. In such material conditions, one cannot have an undisturbed mind. But since bhakti is unconditional, ahaitukya pratihata, Prahlad Maharaj was never disturbed by the chastisements of Hiranyakashipu. On the contrary, the bodily symptoms of his ecstatic love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead turned the minds of his friends, who had also been born in atheistic families. Instead of being disturbed by the torments of his father, Prahlad influenced these friends and cleansed their minds. A devotee is never contaminated by material conditions, but persons subjected to material conditions can become spiritually advanced and blissful upon seeing the behavior of a pure devotee. So in this verse, we see how Prahlad Maharaj's rigid devotional service has protected him from disturbances, external disturbances. And not only that, but others who were poor in spiritual understanding, upon seeing Prahlad Maharaj's behavior, their minds were turned toward this devotional service. They became spiritually advanced, as Prabhupada said, and blissful upon seeing the behavior of such a pure devotee. So, this example of Prahlad Maharaj is an important principle for every devotee aspiring to advance in Krishna consciousness. We all need to see examples of others who are overcoming obstacles. Because everyone in the material world is faced with obstacles and the upheavals that come without any invitation will in due course of time manifest in the life of even a devotee. It's not that, I think Borijan Prabhu was explaining when we went to his seminar this weekend at the farm, and he was saying that we should not foolishly think that when one comes to Krishna consciousness, then immediately upon taking to devotional service, automatically everything becomes, what did he call it? Lollipop land. it was his particular term that he had designated for thinking that everything is going to be enjoyment from here on in. A mystical place where there's only fun and happiness, and where disturbances do not exist. And he said that when one comes to Krishna consciousness, there will be so many disturbances, so many upheavals. I remember very vividly when I first came to the temple and moved into the temple. I had been visiting the temple for some time in Boston, and one of the devotees had given me audio cassette tape of Srila Prabhupada's lecture on the teachings of Queen Kunti. It was the only tape that I had. And I used to listen to it quite frequently, practically almost every day, since it was having Prabhupada's books and having Prabhupada's lectures were not so easy during those days as we have them today. Everybody has an iPod or an MP3 player, and you know, we can have immediate access to 1,800 lectures of Prabhupada. But then I had this one tape. And in this tape, Prabhupada was saying, he says, when one comes to Krishna consciousness, then Maya will test the devotee to see if one is coming to serve Krishna or disturb Krishna. He says, therefore, in the beginning, he said, he described it as like being in the ocean. When one is in the ocean, there will be many disturbances. One should not expect an easy journey having to traverse the massive ocean. So in the same way, he says, we are in the middle of the ocean. And therefore, Maya will test us if we're coming to serve Krishna or disturb Krishna. I remembered that lecture. It was kind of left it indelible, especially those words, because when I moved into the temple, I was already prepared. You know, Prabhupada said it's going to happen. He said in the beginning, he specifically said in the beginning when one comes. Of course, we know it's not just in the beginning. But I was thinking that Prabhupada said it's going to happen, so it's going to happen. So when I moved into the temple, I was very blissful. And I remember going to Mangalarti, doing all the simple chores in the temple, washing pots, doing these simple activities in Krishna consciousness. That I was pretty blissful, and I was starting to wonder. What Prabhupada said in the beginning, there'll be many disturbances. It just went on like that for a few weeks. And then I remember one morning it was a little difficult to get up for Mangalarti. And I was struggling a little bit. And in those days, temple commander, his duty was to get everybody up in the morning. And sometimes they would use quite strong techniques, either lifting up the end of the sleeping bag where your feet are and just shaking you up. Or if that didn't work, it was a glass of water on the face or something. You just had to get up for Mangalarti. Here I am speaking. I was late for Mangalarti this morning. Somebody should have probably thrown some water in my face. But in those days, it was, that's it, Mangalarti. It started to become a cumulative experience for me. Mangalarti all of a sudden was becoming a little difficult. Getting up in the morning, I was becoming tired, and I was thinking, boy, I worked so hard yesterday, and my mind would find so many excuses, and And it was getting hotter and hotter. And then, but the temple commander was quite consistent. And I remember one morning, I just took my fist and I slammed it on the floor and I said, "That's it. That's it. I can't do it. I have to leave." And then all of a sudden, when one comes to devotional service, that Prabhupada's words started reverberating in my mind. When one comes to devotional service, in the beginning there will be so many difficulties and Maya will be testing if one is coming to serve Krishna or disturb Krishna. And there it was. You know, I said, out of madness, delirious or whatever, because of my attachment to sleep, whatever it may be, that I'm leaving. And then Prabhupada's words resonated in my mind. And it really, those words really gave me strength to get up that day and then the next day and the next day. And I remember that was my first test. It was my first test in Krishna consciousness, was dealing with the tiredness and especially then staying awake for the rest of the morning program. And Prabhupada saved me. He saved me. I knew it was, there was no other reason for me to have that cassette and to listen to those, that little section, except that Krishna and Srila Prabhupada knew that exactly what was going to happen to me and knew what I needed to be rescued from my delirium of thinking that I should leave for such a foolish reason, because it was difficult to get up from Mangal Arati. So these, of course, are minor tests. But according to our advancement in Krishna consciousness, then to that degree that we make advancement, then the tests become a little bit more difficult. I remember also in my early years of hearing an example that was given by my godbrother in a Bhagavad Gita class about Maya, how Maya tests one according in proportion to one's advancement in Krishna consciousness. And he gave the example of the boxer, featherweight fighter. And he said that this featherweight fighter had a championship boxing match. Featherweight, of course, is the lightest weight in boxing. So he had a championship match that he had to face that was coming up in some course of time, a few weeks or whatever. And this featherweight fighter was thinking that I'm going to defeat my opponent no matter what happens. So he began exercising and he began eating and turning all his food, all the food that he was eating into bigger muscles. And by his determined effort, he was convinced that at the time of the match that he would step into the ring and finish his opponent in the first round. But when he stepped into the ring, he found out that his opponent was a middleweight. And he said, the example is that as we advance in Krishna consciousness, then Maya will have a test in proportion to our advancement. So we're not in the featherweight class anymore and we move into the middleweight class, then we have other subtle types of tests, which are anartas, which are more difficult to overcome, and we need strength. You know, I often think of that verse, "The path is very difficult and I am blind and my feet they are slipping again and again. Therefore I pray to the saints to grant me their stick of mercy to give me support." Just like Prabhupada's words for me in my little test in the beginning gave me that, it was like a stick of mercy for extra support when one is walking up the hill and slipping. My feet are slipping again and again. But if you have extra support of a stick, then with that extra support you can pull yourself forward. So in the same way, A devotee, as he advances in Krishna consciousness, there will be many obstacles, adversities, and even sometimes major upheavals in his life. And seeing others overcome upheavals by their rigid determination to be engaged in the service of the Lord, it makes us, gives us strength to go on, because we see others are advancing, others are overcoming obstacles. This is what was just being described here by, in the example of Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj had to undergo all kinds of adversities. But I can even think of modern day examples in my own Krishna consciousness, seeing devotees in certain difficult situations that really left an indelible impression in my mind. I remember when I was with Shridhar Maharaj in Mayapur, when Shridhar Maharaj was preparing to leave this world, and he was having kirtan every night, and I was going to his room every night because he had requested me to come in and to lead kirtan for him. So it became a tradition during that time. I remember Shridhar Maharaj was so sick. His stomach was bloated because it was filled with liquid, had to be drained regularly with a big needle, and sometimes he couldn't even get up. And he would have kirtan, and he would raise his hands in the air while lying down in the bed and chanting in the kirtan. I remember one night, after being with him for a substantial amount of time, the kirtan ended and Shridhar Maharaj just sat up. And then he spoke, he gave a lecture about how we're not these bodies. And I remember that it was such a profound, simple, but profound talk. It wasn't very long, but the substance was realized. It was realized. Because how can you be in a situation like that? And then, of course, the tendency is to think, everybody knows I'm sick, why should I get up and speak? Right? That's, the mind would immediately, I could easily see myself in a situation like that, lying down, being in a very distressed condition, and finding a very easy justification to say, okay, kirtan's over, everybody out. But instead, he sat up and he started to speak to everyone about how these bodies are just useless, that they're meant to be engaged in Krishna service, they're going to go at any time. We're not these bodies. We have nothing to do with these bodies. We're transcendental to the material body. The body will die, but the soul will live on. And he was just simple truths of Bhagavad Gita spoken with such conviction. What did it do? It left an indelible impression in my mind. It left such an... I was speaking about it for days. It's just a modern day example. I can think of other examples of things that have left indelible impressions in my mind, just amongst our modern day saints, devotees who, of course, who have departed. But I remember my godbrother Nirguna Prabhu, and I remember once when I was in North Carolina, we got a phone call, and we were told that Nirguna Prabhu was in the hospital. I was staying in Prabhupada Village at the time. I was with Madhuha. Madhuha got a phone call that Nirguna is in the Winston-Salem Hospital. And we asked what happened, and the devotees told us he was hit by a car that was driving like 30, 40 miles an hour and was hit head on. And then we found out later that the reason why he was hit is because the devotees were all crossing this major street, and that he saw his three devotees that were distributing books with him. He saw that they were about to get hit, so he threw his body into them to push them out of the way. And then he got hit by the car, full impact, and was thrown 20 feet into the air and came down on the concrete, and practically every bone in his body was you know, so many bones were broken. So Madhua and I immediately, we said, where, what room, what hospital? We immediately drove to see it. When we arrived there, he was still in the operating room. But we asked the doctors if we waited, and once he came out, would we be able to see him? We told him we were close friends. And we waited for some time, and he was wheeled into the room, and he was conscious. And we said, can we go in and speak to him? He said, the doctor said, yes, you can go, but don't stay long. So we walked in the room, and Nirguna was, his whole body was a cast. He couldn't turn his head or anything like that. And I walked over, and I had to get right in front of him to speak to him. And I looked at him, I said, Haribo, Nirguna. And he looked up with a big smile on his face, and he said, Haribo Maharaj, how's the preaching going in the Soviet Union? I said, Nirguna, I said, how are you? He said, I'm okay. He didn't want to talk about it. I mean, I began trying to talk about, I was thinking, immediately in my mind, I was thinking, what kind of mystic yogi is this? You know, that more important to him was how's the preaching, how's the book distribution. He kept on asking me questions to talk about his own personal sufferings or was not really relevant to the occasion. And I really had a deep impact on me, a deep impression on me. That here's somebody who is so, and he even said, we talked for some time afterwards, and he did gradually, a little bit later, he started talking about the accident. And then before we left, Nirguna just, he tried to put his hands together, he really couldn't. But he said, Maharaj, and he says, please, I ask for you one blessing, from you one blessing. And he said, please, bless me that I can use the rest of this life for preaching Srila Prabhupada's mission and for distributing his books. He said, I have no other purpose for this body. If otherwise, why should I bother letting it get healed? So will you bless me like that, Maharaj? Yes. And I was thinking, this amazing. Amazing. This is amazing. This is totally amazing. This is what great Vaishnavas we're surrounded by. And I'm sure every one of you, at some point or other in your spiritual life, you can recount seeing some devotee in the midst of a reversal and tolerating the inconvenience or tolerating the difficulty. And it leaves like an impression on the mind. It gives you faith. It gives you a desire or it gives you hope that when looking at your own difficulties in Krishna consciousness, that how we should try to overcome them by faith. Obviously, faith, one has to have firm faith. Shraddha Shaddi Vishvas Kahi Sujudanyas Chaya Krishna Bhakti Kali Sava Karma Krita Haya. Shraddha means firm, confident faith that simply by engaging in devotional service to the Lord and chanting the holy names of the Lord, then automatically all of one's other subsidiary duties are fulfilled. And sometimes, you know, we think we have many other things that we have to do in life, but Shraddha means to have that firm conviction that I need to fix my mind on Krishna. I need to take shelter of the holy name in this situation. I need to remember the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj, in this example, Prahlad Maharaj embodied that type of example, but his example was constant. Because it's described by here, he was a perfect unalloyed devotee who had nothing to do with anything material. He was constantly engaged in the service of the Lord's lotus feet. And by seeing not only his constant engagement, but by seeing his symptoms of ecstasy, it had such an impression. Just like there's that example given in Chaitanya Charitamrita I think it was Lord Chaitanya speaking to the Sanodiya Brahmin. Dharma Stapana Hetu. Dharma Stapana Hetu. Sadhura Vyavahara. Right? Sadhura Vyavahara. What is the rest of this? Puri Gosanira. Puri Gosanira. I say Dharma Sara. Something like that. This verse was spoken by Lord Chaitanya, who's speaking about the example of Madhavendra Puri. Actually, today's the disappearance day of Madhavendra Puri. He was speaking about the example of Madhavendra Puri. He says, the activities or the devotee's behavior sets the true standard of religious principles. Right? Madhavendra Puri's behavior was such a standard of religious principles. His was the perfect standard. Madhavendra Puri's example, and he says the devotee's behavior, he sets the standard of religious principles. And then I think he also quoted the verse, Tako pratishta shruti yoavi binana sabhishya nasam matam nabinam dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam mahajano yena kata sapanta. The dry arguments are inconclusive. A great personality cannot be recognized as a great personality if he doesn't have a different opinion than others in order to become recognized as a sage. And then he said that in one studies the Vedic scriptures, that one will see many contradictions in the Vedic scriptures. Therefore, the solid truth of religious principles is hidden in the heart of an unadulterated, unalloyed devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mahajano yena kata sapanta. Therefore, one should accept whatever path, whatever standard the Mahajans leave behind for us to follow. So, Lord Chaitanya was citing these verses to give Madhavendra Puri as an ideal example of religious principles and how he set the standard of religious principles by his behavior. And this happened at a time when Lord Chaitanya, I believe he was traveling to Vrindavan. He went to Mathura and he came to Vishramghat. And he took his bath there. And then as he was entering into Mathura, it's described that anyone who would see Lord Chaitanya, simply by seeing them, they would become filled with ecstasy and achieve ecstatic, loving, devotional service. And then while Lord Chaitanya was walking into Mathura, one Brahmana came and fell at his lotus feet and touched him. And then Lord Chaitanya picked him up in his embrace. And they were saying, embracing each other, chant the name of Hari, chant the name of Hari. And tears were flowing from their eyes. They were manifesting such ecstatic symptoms. And Lord Chaitanya then took this Brahmin to the side. And he said to him, you appear to be very sincere, very learned Brahmin, elderly Brahmin. Can you tell me, from where have you gotten such ecstatic love for devotion, for Lord Shri Krishna? From where has it come? And he said, I think you must have had association of Madhavendra Puri. Otherwise, how could such a display of ecstatic of ecstasy be manifest? And the Brahmin actually told them that, yes, Madhavendra Puri, he came to Mathura. He was once traveling to Mathura. And he came to my home and he accepted me as his disciple. He initiated me in devotional service. And Madhavendra Puri, he also, although a Sanodiya Brahmin is not supposed to offer food to a Vaishnava, Madhavendra Puri took food from the hands of this Brahmin. Became very ecstatic upon eating this food from the Brahmin. So Lord Chaitanya, understanding this, he said immediately to the Brahmin, I want to eat at your home. whatever, if Madhavendra Puri could take food at your house from your hand, then he sets the standard. He sets the example. I'm going to follow his example. I want you to prepare food for me. Namastapanahitya sarvavihara. Puri gosanira. Something. Achar. Say Dhammasara. Madhavendra Puri, he sets the ideal example of religious principles. Therefore, I will eat food from your hand also. So, even the Lord looks to the example of a devotee for his own behavior. What to speak of non-devotees. Even the Lord sees what examples. And in fact, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the verse was quoted in that example. Yad yadacharati sheshtash tatarive tirojanasa yat pramanam kurute lokastad anuvartate. Lord Chaitanya said that whatever acts are performed by great men, then common men will follow. Whatever standards he sets by his exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So Madhavendra Puri said, I will follow that example. Excuse me, the Lord Chaitanya said, I will follow that example. So Madhavendra Puri set so many examples. He also set the example. There was one example when Madhavendra Puri was sent, as we know, all know the story of how Madhavendra Puri, how he was in Govardhan, and how he was absorbed in deep meditation upon the Lord, the pastimes of the Lord. And he didn't even know whether it was day and night, whether he was standing or lying down on the ground. He was just absorbed in deep trance of ecstasy. Yeah. And one day, while he was sitting beneath the tree near Govindakund, we know that the Lord was a young cowherd boy, came to him and said that I brought you this milk. He brought a clay pot of milk and gave the milk. And Madhavendra Puri accepted the milk, and he said, yes, the women who were taking water from the well nearby saw that you were fasting, but in this village nobody fasts. So I want you to take this milk. And Madhavendra Puri took the milk. And then during the night, he just fell off he was in ecstasy, but he fell off into a dreamlike state, fell asleep. And in his dream, that same boy appeared to him in his dream and said, my name is Gopal. And we won't tell the whole story, because we're just using this to illustrate an example of the difficulties Madhavendra Puri had to undergo in fulfilling the instructions of the Lord, who appeared to him three times in a dream. The first time he appeared to him in a dream, and he told him that he had been waiting for Madhavendra Puri to come. He had been hidden during the invasion of the Muslims in the dirt and underneath the brush, and he had been sitting there for a long time. And he told Madhavendra Puri exactly where he was and how he wanted to be pulled out from the ground and taken and served by Madhavendra Puri. And that we know that Madhavendra Puri, he went and he rescued the deity Gopal with many of the villagers and established his worship. And then upon establishing his worship there in Govardhan, by performing of the Anukuta ceremony, then all the neighboring villages, they performed Anukuta, and Gopal was worshipped by everyone in both in that village and all the neighboring villages. And then the king who had seen such elaborate worship of Gopal, he also just came and decided to build this huge temple for Gopal. And then Gopal appeared to him again in the dream and told him that he was still hot from being under the hot sun for so long, and he wanted Madhavendra Puri to go to get to Puri, or Orissa, to get camphor and sandalwood. I think it was something like 80 pounds of sandalwood he was to go and get. And he had to undergo many austerities and difficulties. It wasn't easy traveling at that time. There were many toll collectors, tax collectors, and there were borders that needed to be crossed, and what to speak of rogues and thieves and dacoits. But Madhavendra Puri, not considering any personal inconvenience whatsoever, he undertook the order of the Lord. And we understand that by that example, he showed that what happens, how the Lord takes notice when the devotee is willing to accept personal inconvenience on his behalf and difficulties. Although it was so inconvenient to travel such a distance with such a large quantity of sandalwood, when Madhavendrapuri stopped in Rimuna, the Lord appeared again for the third time in a dream. And he told him. Why did he tell him to put the sandalwood on Gopinath instead of carrying it all that distance? Anyone tell me? Yes, what was the reason? Yes. So therefore the Lord, because he was having so many problems, the Lord wanted to make it easier for Madhavendrapuri. Because he appreciated so much, he did not for a moment. As soon as he had that dream, he immediately left for Orissa without consideration of any difficulties or obstacles. And upon obtaining the sandalwood, he immediately was returning to Govardhan. But because of so many difficulties and hardships he had to undergo, the Lord wanted to show by that example that the Lord will help the devotees. He'll help that devotee who's willing to undergo by making it easier for him to fulfill the devotee's desire to please the Lord. And therefore the example of Madhavendrapuri was that the Lord appeared to him again in a third dream, and he told him, now take all the sandalwood that you have been carrying and grind it into paste and put it on the body of Gopinath, because Gopinath is none different from me. Then when Gopinath feels the cooling effect of that sandalwood and camphor, it will be the same as cooling myself. When Lord Chaitanya was telling this story, Lord Chaitanya was speaking all these stories about Madhavendrapuri, this and of course the story of Madhavendrapuri when the deity of Chirachara Gopinath told the sweet rice. Lord Chaitanya was telling all these stories about Madhavendrapuri to all the devotees who were traveling with him, and he became ecstatic. And after telling all of these stories, he gave another example of Madhavendrapuri. He said Madhavendrapuri was, he spoke one verse. He composed one verse. Ayi dina dayata nata he matura nata kadava lokshase. That verse was actually composed by Madhavendrapuri, where he's described, O my Lord, O my Master, O Master Mathura, where are you now? Because of my not seeing you, my agitated heart has become unsteady. Oh, my most beloved, what should I do now? He was praying in this way. When was he praying this way? At the time of giving up his body. At the time of giving up his body, he was reciting this verse. And it's actually described that there was no fourth person who knew or understand this verse. Only Lord Chaitanya, Radharani herself, and Madhavendrapuri. Madhavendrapuri is actually described as the root of these feelings of love, ecstatic love of Godhead in the mood of separation. He was the root, and from the root became Ishwarpuri, and Lord Chaitanya became the trunk of that tree. But the root of that tree was Madhavendrapuri, of the feelings of separation for love of Godhead. And he was manifesting these feelings of separation at the time of giving up this body, and he was reciting this verse. Ishwarpuri, two personalities. There were two examples which, of course, were illustrated. There was Ishwarpuri, who was helping Madhavendrapuri to remember the Lord by reciting verses that would help him remember the Lord at the time of giving up his body. And then there was Ramachandrapuri. Ramachandrapuri, he said to Madhavendrapuri, he said, why are you lamenting? Don't you know that you should be fixed on Brahman and there'll be no disturbances? And Madhavendrapuri, he said, get out of my sight. If I give up my body seeing your wretched face, then I'll never achieve the Lord of my heart. Condemned Ramachandrapuri for committing such an offense. And actually it's described that an offense committed to the devotee, such a person will even commit an offense to the Lord himself. It's as good as committing an offense to the Lord. And even Ramachandrapuri, later, he committed offense directly to Lord Chaitanya and criticized him for eating too much, for eating sweetmeats at night. So Madhavendrapuri showed two examples. One was the example of Ramachandrapuri, which was the wrong example. The other was the example of Ishwarpuri, who with his own hands would clean up his stool and urine, would render service to him while he was an invalid. And he would speak to Madhavendrapuri in such a way that he would help him to remember the Lord in the mood that Madhavendrapuri was in. He was reciting this verse just prior to his giving up his body. And he was feeling, oh my Lord, oh my Master, oh Master of Mathura. When will I see you again? Because of not seeing you. With this type of viraha, this type of separation, is the mood of the gopis. The mood of the gopis, feelings of separation from the Supreme Personality of God, from Krishna, when he leaves Vrindavan and goes to a distant place. Of course, there are different types of separation. This type of saturation is called Kinshit Sadur Pavas, when the Supreme Lord leaves to go to some distant place and he stays away for a long time. And this is the type of separation that Radharani and the gopis were feeling when Krishna left Vrindavan. Another type of separation, it's described as four types of separation. The first is called Purvarag. Purvarag is a separation that one feels before seeing, either by hearing about, seeing a picture. So all the gopis, when they were very young, it's described, the gopis developed feelings of purvarag, of attachment to Krishna. But they hadn't seen him yet, but they were very anxious to see him. Because they were hearing from other gopis about Krishna, the Nityasiddha gopis. And they developed purvarag, and then they wanted to see Krishna. And then, of course, purvarag is a type of attachment that the gopis feel that even after seeing Krishna, each time they see him again, it's like seeing him for the first time. That's the nature of purvarag. Of course, so the only for a devotee who is a sadhaka, who's aspiring for the association of the Lord, this is the only kind of separation such a devotee should feel or can feel. Because we've never seen. The other types of man, which is separation due to anger. Sometimes when there's anger, a display of anger between Radharani and Krishna, then due to that anger, then they are feeling, Krishna is feeling separation from Radharani, and Radharani is feeling separation from Krishna. Radharani is manifesting that anger. And Krishna will try in different ways to get Radharani's mind back to allowing him to associate. Sometimes he'll even take his own flute and place it at her feet. Please forgive me. So this is another type of separation which is called man. The other is called prem vaichitya. You know, the separation when one is in the association of each other, but still being in the association of each other, one feels separation. Thinking, oh, any moment I could lose that association. Or that time when I think Krishna and Radharani, they were sitting next to each other, and Radharani looked in Krishna's eyes and saw her reflection and thought that Krishna was with another gopi. And she fainted onto the ground. She was with Krishna, but she was the only one, but she was thinking this way. And she fainted and she fell out of the ground at the separation. Or another time when they were sitting together and there was a bee buzzing around and Madhu Mangala was chasing the bee out of the kunja. And then he came back to say, oh, Madhu was gone. And Madhu was gone. And she immediately was thinking it was Krishna. Krishna's left and she fell again, thinking that Krishna is gone, even though she was with Krishna. Many examples of pain by Chitya. This is also separation. Then there's pravas. Pravas is when Krishna goes out for a short period of time, such as the separation Mother Jasoda feels when Krishna is going to the pasturing grounds each day. Right? Mother Jasoda, she goes and she looks for various excuses to because she doesn't want Krishna to leave. All the cowherd boys have assembled, waiting out in front of the house, and they're calling Krishna, come on, Krishna, let's go. It's time to take the calves out to pasture. And Mother Jasoda comes out in front, and she's looking at Krishna, and then before Krishna leaves, she goes over to Krishna, and she gives him something to eat. And then Krishna takes the food and she turns around and comes back and she turns her neck. This is all described in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Sanatana Goswami has so nicely described how Mother Jasoda looks and she says, well, I have to give something else to Krishna. Maybe he's thirsty, and she brings him some fruits and some juice. And then she turns around and she comes back and she stops and she turns and looks. It doesn't want Krishna to leave, and she finds another excuse and she says, oh, Krishna's clothes look disheveled. Maybe I should go and I should straighten out his clothes. And she begins straightening out his clothes, his turban, make sure everything looks right. And then she walks back to go back towards the house and she stops and she looks again, staring at Krishna. Tears are coming to her from her eyes. And then she thinks, maybe I should tell all his friends to protect Krishna, because Krishna, he's always getting himself in trouble when he goes out to the pasturing grounds. So she comes back again. And she tells Balaram, Balaram, you stand in front, and Sridham, and you stand on the side, and you stand behind. You protect Krishna. Make sure nothing happens to him. I know sometimes when he comes back, if I see there's so many scratches on his body, he's going into the brush. He's going too deep, and he's getting scratches from the thorns. So you should protect him. And then she turns around and walks back to the house. She turns and looks at Krishna again. And finally, Krishna comes up to Mother Jasoda and clasps her lotus feet and says, Mother, please, go home. Please let me go. All my friends are waiting for me. Krishna's doing, he wants to, all this cowardly. Can't you see they're all waiting for me? Please, just go home. I'll be back. Mother Jasoda stops and she stands there and she watches as Krishna leaves with her friends. And it's described that she looks just like a mother cow with the display of love for her calf. And she stands just like a painted picture. She's not moving. Just as she's watching Krishna go off into the with the dust of the cow, of the calf's hoof prints raising in the air. She just stands there and watch. Because she's feeling separation. Krishna's going for some short distance. But then there's the long distance. When Krishna leaves, the gopis, the kind of separation they're feeling when they see a Kuru coming in. Krishna and Balaram are on the chariot, and the gopis. This is the mood that Madhavendra Puri was when he was describing, oh my Lord, oh my Master, oh Master Mathura. What will I do now? Because of not being able to see, again, my agitated heart becomes unsteady. And this is Radharani. She's thinking of such great separation. Krishna's leaving. He's going to Mathura. How will I live? And the only reason why they don't give up their bodies is because they're thinking, if I give up my bodies, how will Krishna live without us? But they're actually feeling such torment of separation. And this same feeling of separation is what Madhavendra Puri was speaking. He was praying this verse, reciting this verse, just prior to giving up his body. Such an example. So these are examples. Of course, they're examples in the scriptures, and we also chose to give a few modern-day examples of devotees who showed by their own example of how they could be fixed in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord in the face of adversity. And what happens is, as described here, Prahlad Maharaj. What happened with Prahlad Maharaj? Prahlad Maharaj was placed in circumstances in which he was always tortured by his father. In such material conditions, Prabhupada says, one cannot have an undisturbed mind. One cannot have an undisturbed mind. What is he saying? One will have a disturbed mind. It's obvious. The mind will be disturbed. Being tortured. But since bhakti is unconditional, ahaitukya patiyata, Prahlad Maharaj was never disturbed by the chastisements of Hiranyakashipu. That is the nature of bhakti. Ahaitukya patiyata means no interruption. There's no disturbances. Unmotivated and uninterrupted, as we know, is described in the Bhagavatam. Prahlad Maharaj's motivation was always to remember the Supreme Lord. And it was always to be affixed and rendering devotional service to the Lord. And his remembrance of the Lord was always uninterrupted. Even in the face of every attempt Hiranyakashipu made to torture his son, Prahlad would remember the Lord and the Lord would protect him. So not only those who are, as described here, without persons who are poor in spiritual understanding, not only are their minds turned towards them, but also, as we understand by these examples, the Lord's mind is turned towards them as well. The Lord turns his mind towards that devotee and will always protect that devotee who is willing to undergo difficulties in the face of adversity and continue to render service. Tatenu kampam susamikshamano bhujana evatmakritam dipakam vidvagvapabhivadanam namaste jivetu yomukti padesa dayabak. The one who seeks your compassion and thus tolerates all kinds of adverse conditions due to the karma of his misdeeds, who always engages in your devotional service with body, mind, and words, and always continues to glorify you, he certainly becomes a bona fide candidate for liberation. Mukti padesa dayabak. We oftentimes give that example. That the dayabak means, mukti padesa dayabak means it becomes his rightful inheritance. Rightful inheritance means that if one has an inheritance left behind from his parents, in order to get that which is rightfully his, only thing he has to do is live. That's all. It's rightfully his. He just has to live and he'll get it. So in the same way, a devotee who tolerates all kinds of adverse conditions, who continues to engage in Krishna's service and continues to glorify Krishna, his inheritance, all he has to do is live and he'll get his inheritance. He'll continue to live. Mukti padesa dayabak. Of course, we live by preaching. We live by hearing and chanting the glories of God. That is our life for the devotee. That's how a devotee lives. Every day, he gets life from hearing and chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord in the association of devotees and by bringing Krishna consciousness to others, as Prahlad Maharaj, as we explained last week, showed by his example, caring for the welfare of others. So, this not only captures the attention of those who are poor in spiritual understanding, but it captures the attention of the Supreme Lord. And the Lord himself says, by the dust of the lotus feet of my pure devotees, I desire to purify the entire material world which is situated within me. Thus I always follow in the footsteps of my devotees, who are always equally disposed towards everyone, who are always fixed in chanting my glories. Krishna says, I follow in their footsteps and I take their dust. Krishna looks, his attention is captured by the devotee who is fixed in devotional service. So the devotee never wants to have attention. Just as Madhavendra Puri, when Gopinath stole the pot of sweet rice, and when the pujari went out after the sweet rice was stolen, and Gopinath told the pujari there was a sannyasi whose name is Madhavendra Puri, who is sitting nearby, you should bring the sweet rice to him. And the pujari said, where is the sannyasi named Madhavendra Puri? Please, I'm calling out Madhavendra Puri. Please show yourself to me. Gopinath has stolen some sweet rice for you. So when he found Madhavendra Puri, and Madhavendra Puri was thinking, he took that sweet rice. He said, the Lord has stolen sweet rice from me. When people find out about this, then surely I'll be surrounded by so many people. So in the middle of the night, he decided to leave so that he would not get any recognition or any reputation. He left that place. But as described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, for a devotee, reputation follows him wherever he goes. So even though he left that place, because of his ideal example, and because the Lord recognized him, then also so many others recognized Madhavendra Puri because he could not hide himself. Because the Lord recognized him. The Lord recognizes his devotee, then the devotees will recognize certainly that devotee. So, and then the Lord, what to speak of the devotees, When the non-devotees hear about the example of such devotees, they'll become attracted. Those who are fixed in devotional service, not only they become attracted, but they'll become purified. Simply by hearing that example, they'll become attracted to the lotus feet of the devotee and therefore also become attracted to the lotus feet of the Lord. So this was the example that Prahlad Maharaj established by his unalloyed devotional service. I'll read the verse again. Because of his association with perfect unalloyed devotees who had nothing to do with anything material, Prahlad Maharaj constantly engaged in the service of the Lord's lotus feet. By seeing his bodily features when he was in perfect ecstasy, persons very poor in spiritual understanding became purified. In other words, Prahlad Maharaj bestowed upon them transcendental bliss. Okay, I think I'll end here. It's late. And thank you very much for your kind attention. And Madhavendra Puri ki, Prahlad Maharaj ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Go Premanandi.